This is Brian Cambria with news for the Western Slope, Tuesday, October 8, 2013. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel on Saturday reported that the Delta County Farm Bureau will host a fundraiser for the Hostetler family. Owners of a Hotchkiss hen house at the center of a years-long legal dispute over whether the facility is compatible with the surrounding Powell Mesa neighborhood. The Sentinel reports the ad in the October 2nd High Country Shopper invites guests to show their support for agriculture and help raise money for the Hostetler's legal defense. A Delta County judge recently ruled that the hen house would have to shut down, citing concerns about the facility's health effects on neighbors. The county and facility's owners, both defendants in the case, have promised they'll appeal, something they'll have to do before October 18th. KVNS Travis Bubenik has more.
The Farm Bureau's fundraiser has rekindled allegations that the county has long been biased on the side of the henhouse operators. Travis Jordan, a resident of Redlands Mesa, where another Hostetler-owned henhouse has been proposed and accordingly denied by the judge's ruling, told the Daily Sentinel that former Commissioner Olin Lund's participation in the Farm Bureau fundraiser proves Lund has for a long time supported the Hostetlers. Lund is the county's Farm Bureau board president and served some of that position while still a commissioner. But he says he wasn't part of any Farm Bureau discussions on the case during that time.
I recused myself from those meetings. The vice president took those over at that time, and I even left the building. I went outside for those portions of the meetings, and I got pretty familiar with the sidewalk, walking up and down the street outside.
Lund maintains he was unbiased throughout the case as a commissioner, saying his victory over a lawsuit brought against him on that issue cleared him of those charges. Lund also claims those allegations are, at this point, irrelevant.
Commissioners, after I'm gone, have made the same decision.
It isn't just dust.
Susan Raymond is a plaintiff in the case and lives just up the road from Western Slope Layers. She maintains her health has been threatened by airborne bacteria from chicken manure that blows from the hen house. She says she doesn't understand why the county continues to fight the judge's ruling.
They've already spent in excess of $1 million fighting this. Why not take the money and help these people move this facility? This is not accomplishing anything.
A lot of laws have basically been written to sort of favor big agribusiness interests.
Danielle Diamond works for the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, a national group that works to stop so-called factory farms, and also to help industrial-scale farmers transition to what the group sees as a more socially and ecologically responsible form of ag. Her group has consulted with the plaintiffs in the Powell Mesa case, and Diamond says this case is just one of many across the nation that pits communities against industrial-grade farms.
The laws have been written in such a way that, you know, it's difficult to stop one of these facilities from coming in. In many states that I work, it's very difficult for the local community to have a say in whether or not one of these facilities is sited in their community.
I asked Diamond whether the final outcome of this case, if there is ever one, sets a precedent for similar cases across the country.
It does, in a way. The fact that the court made a very clear determination that because of the public health impacts the facility was having, it was incompatible with the area. You know, it's significant in that regard. And I think this is, you know, about the future of our food system. And the decisions that are being made now, even on the local level, are going to have an impact on this community in the future, as they will in other communities in Colorado and around the nation.
Asked the same question from the Farm Bureau's perspective, Olin Lund agreed it could set a precedent, but says it could be a dangerous one.
Somewhere less than 100 cows is the equivalent to this, and there are lots of places in Delta County where there are less than 100 cows, and it's perceived as a precedent that is a threat to family farming.
As the case makes its way to the appeals court, Raymond says she's still confident the courts will uphold the decision to shut down Western Slope Layers. But at the same time, she's preparing for the possibility that if the hen house stays open, she might just be forced to move.
I'm already giving horses away, selling horses that I normally wouldn't. You know, my economic loss is as great, if not greater, than theirs. This is everything I've worked for is sitting on my 60 acres there.
Of course, if the judge's ruling does stand, the hen house operators will be the ones forced to move. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubenik.
The Powell Mesa hen house dispute has renewed questions about zoning and the right to farm in Delta County. Adopted in 1996 by the state of Colorado and the county, the right to farm and ranch policy lays out some parts of rural life that residents are expected to accept including noise from tractors, manure, odor from animal confinement, and the use of pesticides. For some historical context on the policy, KVNF's Marty Durlin spoke with a former Delta County commissioner about the early days of the Right to Farm policy.
As a Delta County commissioner 17 years ago, Jim Ventrilo supported the Right to Farm as a way to defend local ranchers and farmers from litigation.
We were starting to get a lot of development in the county. I had calls from people complaining about crop dusters, there were calls about people baling their hay in the middle of the night, and there were all kinds of complaints. And at that point, the idea was to get the nuisance complaints off of the backs of existing agriculture. That's where we were coming from, because we had growth that was rapidly expanding out into agricultural areas.
What's your understanding of why Delta County has no zoning? Wouldn't zoning help eliminate or alleviate some of these problems?
Well, zoning's always been a four-letter word. I don't think Delta County, the unincorporated area, wants it. And I don't think that's changed yet. That's why we went to specific development. That was kind of our answer to the zoning question. It's like, okay, you want a change of use in your area, meet with your neighbors, the ones who are going to be most impacted by it, and if there are, you know, impacts, can you mitigate those? And if you can't mitigate, then it should be denied, you know. When we were revising the master plan and looking at, you know, the area planning committees and that whole thing, we got lots of feedback. I mean, we had a proposal at one time that we went out there with, and we just, like I remember one in Crawford, we almost didn't make it out of, you know, but it was kind of a permit type of system. It was kind of a loose idea of zoning and some building codes and stuff. People didn't want it. And so out of that evolved specific development. I don't know. I heard different complaints over the years. Sometimes they said, well, if you're the developer applying for it, they're meeting you to death. You got to go to the area planning committee, you got to go to the planning commission, then you got to go to the commissioners, you know, and you can get different answers at each level.
What if the residential area is there first and the agricultural wants to move in? Was that part of your thinking of how to handle that?
We really didn't have those issues at the time. It was the residences moving in. And now, after that growth, we've got residences out there in what was ag. And that's where you've got the problem now. Probably, and we're probably talking about the chicken farms. If you went to the time when we first adopted the Right to Farm, there were just a few odds and ends houses around out there. There weren't retirees living in the area who invested in it. It was the farmers who were in the area. And we were trying to protect the farms that were already there from all of these people moving in who didn't understand agriculture, whether it was irrigation and water rights, or that farmers have to get their hay in when they can, even if that's the middle of the night. And so this is it's not really a new thing, but we didn't look at that in the early years because we didn't have that problem.
Can Delta County really continue to go forward without zoning or with only the specific development process? Or do you see any kind of win-win thing out there?
Sadly, I think the polarization, you know, it used to be when I first got into office that all of the distrust was at the federal government. It came down, worked its way down to the state, and it's at the local level now, too. And I think it doesn't seem like anybody wants to find the middle ground anymore.
If Ventrilo has advice for the current commissioners, it's cautious and somewhat contradictory.
Listen to your attorney, make the decision that is the right one legally, and whether they did that or not, I don't know. But they were going to get sued either way. You know, this was a no-win-win for them. And unfortunately, the specific development did not work in this case. Or maybe it did, because the area said no, the planning commission said no, and the commissioners said yes.
For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
In other news, the state of Colorado released an audit on Monday criticizing the state lottery for high administrative costs and high prize amounts. As the Denver Post reports, the lottery was faulted for not giving enough money to beneficiaries and issuing questionable bonuses to employees in the amount of $400,000. Barbara Brawl, head of the State Department of Revenue, says the lottery has been working on the issues raised in the report for the past couple of years and have tried to increase beneficiary payouts. At the same time, the lottery's management was recently criticized when it awarded a $62 million contract to an overseas company. That move also raised questions about the fairness of the state's selection process for awarding retailers. One of the companies that lost out in the bid for that award filed a petition in Denver District Court last month asking a judge to view what it called the state's, quote, fundamentally flawed process of selecting lottery contractors. Two Republican members of the state legislature's Joint Technology Committee have previously criticized the lottery's procedures as well. Last month's historic flooding on the Front Range has left some public schools scrambling to help students who now find themselves homeless. The State Department of Education estimates nearly 4,000 students could be classified as homeless after their homes were destroyed or damaged by the floods, while some students simply can't get back to their homes because of road closures. According to Ed News Colorado, over a dozen school districts across the state are sorting out how to provide basic services like transportation to school, free lunches, school clothes, and supplies for children displaced by the flooding. But the number of students legally classified as homeless has proven overwhelming and costly. A district in Weld County is reportedly paying around $1,000 a day to take displaced kids from temporary homes to their schools. In some cases, those students are far away, staying at hotels or with relatives. But as Ed News Colorado reports, districts are about to get a $750,000 federal grant to help with those costs. That money comes from the SERV project, or School Emergency Response to Violence, a program aimed at helping districts recover from violence or disasters. The money could reportedly start showing up in late November. About 30 districts across the state are eligible for the grant money. And finally, U.S. Forest Service entomologist Roy Mask recently explained to a group of Ouray residents that two species of beetles are responsible for forest infestations around the town. As The Watch reports, Mask told residents a recent USDA aerial survey of nearby forests showed extensive infestation from the fir engraver and Douglas fir beetles. Mask told the residents, quote, "You're not going to make this go away. It's not possible." And added that the beetles have, quote, "got us outnumbered." The Watch says Mask also believes the infestation is likely to continue unchecked in the years ahead. The forests around Ouray are susceptible to such widespread infestations mainly because of their unusual density. Plus, those forests are drought-stressed and already recovering from a previous epidemic of western spruce budworm that took place in the early 90s. For KVNF News, this is Brian Cambria.